Welcome to Integrate This, your go-to EdTech podcast where curiosity meets classroom innovation. Join your hosts, David Berner and Jeremy Mikla, as we explore the rapidly evolving world of educational technology. From game-changing tools to insightful conversations with today's top EdTech voices, we're here to help educators stay informed, inspired, and ready to innovate. So tune in, level up, and let's integrate this.
Thank you for joining us for the Integrate This EdTech podcast. As you can see, if you're watching this on YouTube, we have a very special guest with us here today. And if you're not, and you're listening to it on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we thank you for joining us. Today, we are joined by Liz Vosey. And Liz, we are so happy to have you with us on the program. Liz is an instructional technology specialist at Dartmouth Public Schools. Her and I were able to connect when she presented a poster session at the ISTE conference in San Antonio, maybe a little over a month ago now. It's hard to believe how fast time flies in the summer, but Liz, thank you once again. Can you just kind of start off by giving us maybe a little bit of your background and how did you get into the role and the position that you have?
Sure. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to do this podcast with you guys today. So my name is Liz Vosey, and I'm from Massachusetts, and I work in Dartmouth Public Schools, where I was a fifth grade teacher for the first 10 years of my career. And then right before COVID in 2019, the position opened up for instructional technology specialist. And it was trial by fire, because then that spring we went full remote. And so I learned so much. I went from being like the techie teacher to being like an actual instructional technology specialist. So that hybrid and virtual year taught me so much about personalized learning and reaching and teaching our students. And that has really been the guide over these past 4 years. And made me really fall in love with the position. It is the perfect job. It's so much fun because I know everyone, and I'm able to help everyone, and I don't evaluate anyone. So it's the perfect job for me. It's so much fun, and I get to do awesome projects like the one that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and that was kind of the catalyst a little bit. I know Jeremy was at ISTE and attended a session with you that was about this perfect book project. And it seems to combine AI, that's obviously a massive topic. And then the other side, the love of reading. So those two things coming together, what was the initial spark of inspiration for that project? And what were you trying to help students do to be able to engage with that?
So it's actually really interesting. Last summer, I was accepted into the Google Innovator Program, which is a really difficult program to get into as an educator. And we spent 3 or 4 days in Chicago at the Google office last summer, really diving into a specific problem of practice that we wanted to tackle. And so I had chosen as my problem of practice this burden of teaching our littlest learners how to live in this world of artificial intelligence and preparing these elementary teachers to prepare those students for that. And so for me as an instructional technology specialist, this is a really heavy weight on my shoulders. And so through the program last summer, we were able to make a plan for different ways that we could get some AI literacy for our teachers as well as for our students. And I started last school year kind of with my like radar up, trying to figure out a way to actually integrate it in a meaningful way. Because so much about what we do with technology, I mean, integrate this is what you guys are all about. It's not about just tech for tech's sake. We have to integrate it and find that meaning, that personalization, that differentiation that we need to do it. And so it was last October, I was in a literacy meeting and we've done a full swing towards science of reading and really phonics-based learning. And our teachers were finding that now the books are more accessible for students, especially when we talk about decodables, but they weren't as interesting. So they were finding that the kids weren't engaged in the books, because when you make a true decodable, you're very limited on the vocabulary and the actual words that you can use. And so we're sitting there and they're like, they just don't like reading these books. And that was when I like had this huge light bulb moment. I was like, well, that's perfect because AI can do that. AI can take a student's interest, wrestling, horses, unicorns, and now it's got a whole set of words that it can use that the student can access, plus those phonics words. And it's really algorithmic at that point. So to put it together to develop a book that the student can read and that the student loves to read. And so that's when I was like, we have something here. And now we need to kind of turn it into a project.
That's really cool. And I love how you did kind of give the nod to where not tech just for tech's sake, but you know, something that will be meaningful. And really you have to think, I think, and put at the forefront the needs of the learner before everything else. And then it's once you have that, what are the tools that you can apply that's going to help bring that learning, you know, to accelerate it, to accommodate it to the forefront so that it becomes a better experience for not just the students, but the teachers as well, right? Which kind of brings me to this, right? In your role, you know, as the instructional technology specialist, you're much more, I think, probably in front of teachers, more so than your own classroom full of kiddos, like you did once have when you started, you know, first out of college or whatever it happened to be. But, you know, and because of that, then, and I think, you know, this is sometimes the position we find ourselves in too, when we don't have our own students, that we have to find ways to collaborate with those classroom teachers. So can you kind of touch on a little bit about how your perfect book project really became a collaborative effort between yourself and the teachers that you worked with and the students as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, I really have the perfect job. So the way that our model is set up is that I see every single class in our school every other week with the teacher present. So it's student facing, but it's also teacher modeling and hands-on like professional development. And so the way our model works is that there are certain lessons of the year where I'm fully in charge. So I cover our digital literacy and computer science standards. And then I try to work with the teacher during those lessons to develop content specific projects that we can keep rolling for those other visits that I come in. So I'm constantly working with the teachers in front of the students. I know all of the students and I've been in this role now for 6 years. So I really know all the students. And when I decided like, okay, we're going to try to turn this into something, I was looking for teachers who would be willing to do some risk taking. And I, like I said, I have the best job. So all of the teachers in my school are really willing to do that. But I found this one third grade teacher who I work very closely with, who is also going at the time for her literacy license. So she was deep in the world of early literacy. And I was deep in this like building of an AI foundational like skills and lessons for students. And so when we took our two skills and like put them together, that's where we're like, okay, like let's truly make this a collaborative project for the two of us as professionals, for the students to be working with each other, and then for these two topics. So that's where like she was fully on board.
Yeah, that's really great too. I like what you said there about the hands-on approach, because I think that rather than, you know, Liz being like, oh, you're in an office somewhere doing some things, it's like, sounds like you're right out there with the teachers, working with them, engaged in the work that they're doing in the classroom and that the students are doing and really a part of it. So that's really cool. What was it as far as the project goes when you're looking at like the AI literacy piece of it? How did you determine what skills would be important for students to learn about? And then what skills did you think were be better for the adults, teachers to do? Because I know you, like there's those two elements to it. From your side of things, what did you think would be good for you to cover? And then how did you pair that with what the teacher would be doing?
That was a huge challenge. A huge challenge of this project was determining really what to and not to teach, what they were prepared to learn, not prepared to learn, because I am all about research-based instruction. And there was just like last September, there was no research on how to teach students or even adult learners at that point about these skills. But I am lucky that I have had the experience of being able to train educators across the country. I work part-time for ed technology specialist as the director of curriculum. So I've been doing these training workshops with educators, K-12 educators across the country on foundational AI skills. And from doing this with such a diverse group of adult learners, I think we forget oftentimes when we teach teachers, they're also a very diverse group of learners with their own needs and goals. So I really try to keep that at the forefront of my mind when I'm working with educators as well as students. And I had found these like really foundational pillars that I thought could be adapted really to adult learners and to student learners, because at this point we're all new learners in this topic. It's just that developmental ability that you bring to the table. So we really started with just this foundation of like, what is machine learning and artificial intelligence? And we came up with some really basic simulations that we could model for teachers and then have the teachers model for the students to teach them a little bit like about how you train a model and how they're trained and then how they can use that training to develop new content. And so we did some simulations, and with our first graders, that's really where it ended. So the first graders were learning about like, okay, how are computers developing these stories, these words? And we did a simulation where called the one word story, where it's like an old drama exercise where you have like, if the three of us were together, we each have our own knowledge base and our information that we bring, and then we're given a prompt. The prompt might be tell a story about a fish. But then we would go through the three of us, and each of us could only tell one word at a time. So while we each have our own knowledge base, some of that overlaps, some of that conflicts. And if we were to do this exercise over and over again, we would continue to come up with a different story every time. And then the better the prompt is, tell us about a fish who got lost in the ocean looking for his dad, well, then our story is going to get more and more predictable. And so with our first graders, that's really where the lesson ended. And then we talked to them about, okay, what would you want this machine to develop a story about? And then as we get up through second, third, fourth, and fifth grade, we start to learn about prompting, feedback, refinement, and then really a lot about hallucinations and bias as we get up to fourth and fifth grade. And it's been great conversations and good foundational AI skills for the adults as well as the students. Because when I do these same lessons and activities for my adult learners, we also focus on those same pillars. We can just kind of go in different directions with them.
Right. So you're really considering that scope and sequence as part of it, you know, where you start with, okay, you're playing that one word game. And really that's like an exercise in trying to predict what word should come next, which is exactly what our large language models are actually doing and basing it upon their data sets and things like that. But that's a great way to introduce to even our littlest learners, you know, how that model works and could work in your own life and how the computers are using it as well. And now as you bring this project forward, right? Eventually you decided to kind of create your own like a Gemini gem, right? Like your own chatbot that you called the literacy partner. You know, it operates with its own specialized knowledge base that includes kind of the components of K-12 literacy as part of it. Did you feel like, you know, rather than just going to Gemini or ChatGPT and just trying to have the kids or the adults that were working with them use that large chatbot, you know, why did you eventually settle on, you know, kind of creating this AI assistant with Gemini Gems to kind of help you through this project? You know, do you think that was a better way to use your time because of that, or did you have another reason altogether? I'd like to hear what you think.
No, I mean, that's a great question. And again, it's such a complicated answer, because if we think back to when this project started last November, the models and the process have evolved so much since then. So I was developing the project, I was developing the topics, and I was also developing the process and the prompts to be able to get a high quality response. And that developing the actual prompts, I mean, hundreds of hours spent developing these prompts and the process to get a high quality book at the end. So I think that's an important piece of this is the process that the students went through, where we started by identifying topics within, like, what would your perfect book genre be? What would the characterization be? So they're identifying these specific things, but then I needed to craft the prompts to be able to take that information. And then, like you said, apply these literacy foundations, and to make it a process where the students could not only focus on learning those literary elements, but also learn about the AI process. And so what they got back from that first interaction, what Gemini provided back to them, was five potential book titles, mm-hmm. and five synopses. And so each of those was also written at the student's reading level. So then the student went through and picked the one that they wanted, the one or two that they liked the best, and they learned about giving feedback. So they, what do you love about this story? What would you want to add? Would you want a plot twist? And then, so I had all of these prompts based on grade level. I mean, hundreds of prompts, and they were all in a Google Doc because GEMS didn't exist, at least for me. Like they weren't unlocked for our accounts. I think they didn't even go free until like the spring. And so I had these Google Docs filled with prompts that I would copy and paste over and then copy and paste the students' information. And I liked being in control of that piece of it. So I did it for the pilot class all myself because I wanted to make sure there was no personally identifiable information at all in any of these. And I also wanted to be that content monitor. There's much better guardrails now in Gemini than there were when this first started. And some of the content was concerning based on the students' interests, because students have very, very broad range of interests. So I had these Google Docs just filled with prompts. And then when I finished the pilot class, I was like, okay, now I would really like to be able to teach the teachers how to do some of this. And I'm scrolling through, like, just, I mean, 50 pages of prompts that I've now developed based on grade level, based on reading level, based on this. And I was like, okay, this is not transferable. Like, this right now, it's a great me project, but this isn't a project that I could hand off to a teacher and say, okay, and then you copy this prompt in, and then you copy this prompt in. And so that was when they had just launched GEMS for public schools, like the EDU accounts. And I was like, I can build a GEM that holds all of this pre-prompting. And so the one that you saw is really a generalized one, but I have specific ones for grade levels and for my schools. Like, we use foundations as our phonics spectrum. So our decodable GEM is fully loaded with the actual foundation's phonic spectrum. And so once you add in the GEM, it saves the teacher from having to type in every time, I need an 8-sentence synopsis, 5 options for, like, all of those details are already there. So then through that workflow, it prompts them, okay, what's the student's information? And I can even add in, like, reminders in there. Remember, no personally identifiable information, to, like, double check for this, make sure they don't have their names or the name of their sports team. And so then it prompts the teacher to put in the information and then prompts them to tell them what to do from there. So it was really about time saving, but also transferability. But what I love about GEMS, I know I'm talking about what I love about GEMS, is that it's still all that pretext is right there. So it's transparent. When we use a lot of these online story generators, you don't know what the programmers have done for that pre-prompting. So when you put in a genre and it throws you back a story, you don't know what other instructions it's been given. But with the GEMS, it's totally transparent. It's all there if you want to scroll through.
Right. And I love that part of it. And I geek out on that a little bit, because one of my favorite sessions that I will present at different conferences or different workshop days is on creating your own chatbots. And here, basically, this is what you've done.
Yep.
You've created your own chatbots that operate in a way that you want to. And I constantly am reminding people, and it's, if you want it to be good and you want it to do exactly what you want it to do, you have to keep going back to it and keep iterating on it until it is consistently, you know, pumping out exactly what it is that you want. And it's obvious to me that you've, you know, definitely spent that time building that data set of your own, that knowledge base that is then transferable through that particular chatbot, whether it's GEMS or if you're using a different one, maybe a notebook LM one or even ChatGPT's ones as well. But really, really cool. And I would say, on behalf of other teachers, thank you for putting the time in to do that.
Yeah, and it's a great process too to just hear you talk about, because I think that that's one of the things that often gets missed, is that when you're doing some of these things and working with these chatbots or creating these chatbots, there's a lot of struggle that goes into it. Like, it's not just like very easy. I know, you know, the easy button gets referenced a lot with AI, but there's so much iteration and things that happen in the process of this. And I think it's also great because you had mentioned that you're going through that process of struggle so that you can then provide your teachers the opportunity to create some things with your chatbot that lift some of the struggle off of them because of their time constraints and everything and being in front of students all day. So that is two things that really stood out to me there from what you were detailing. As far as the workflow for the project with the students, how does the workflow of the project contribute to students' understanding of AI capabilities and then their ability to inspire and develop the perfect book?
Yeah, so it was another challenge of this is that all of my students are under 13. So there could be no direct AI use by our students. And so this was really about teaching concepts to students and then having them watch and see what those products could be and what the process looks like without having firsthand experience of it. And we do a lot of digital citizenship lessons in our schools. And we compare going online to being like in a city on a field trip. And so I often tell the students, like when I'm monitoring your accounts or I'm doing these things, I'm chaperoning you on a field trip. When we go to a city, there are places that it's safe for you to go by yourself that are fun and educational. There are places that are safe for you to go with a grown up. And there are places that are just not safe or appropriate for kids. But we still need to learn about those places, so we know when we're ready to go to them, what to do there. So this was one of those situations where they're not actually going to use it, but it's important. We talk to them. It's important that they learn about it because it's part of their life. And a lot of them are experiencing it at home when they're outside of the school and outside, even though those age restrictions still exist, we know a lot of our students are still exposed to it. So coming up with this process and being able to teach them how to do it at those various grade levels. So each one builds. If you do get a chance to visit the website, which I'll showcase in a little bit, it walks through the process for each of those grades. And so we did it all in Google Classroom. We used tabs, which has been like life-changing in Google Docs since they added tabs. And they started off with like genre and characterization. And that's when they got back those synopsis. Then we learned about feedback. And so once the students learned how to give solid feedback, what do you like? What do you want to change? What do you want to add? The teacher at that point was teaching about plot elements and story arcs. So that was the focus of their feedback, was about building a strong, engaging story arc. Then we would put that into Gemini with the prompt, so the gem. And the student got back then a 10-chapter outline. And so the outline was created again to be at their reading level, but also to have three events in each chapter. And so the student at that point was going in and we learned about editing and refinement and that you really need to take control of this content when we talk about them being the developer. And so their job was to add in a fourth item to each chapter. So that was either an additional event in the chapter, additional detail, maybe a specific piece of dialogue that they wanted in there. And so that's why this is really, it's a reading project. It's not so much a writing project because the students are doing a lot of reading through this whole process, all at their reading level and all based on a topic that is engaging for them. And then it was only at that point did we actually put it in to generate the full text because we wanted the student to be in the driver's seat all the way along. We didn't want to just go in and say, write a 10-chapter book about unicorns. We really wanted it to be in a way that would be interesting and engaging for the student and for them to like realize. And that happened a lot as they were collaborating. They were like, wait, you have a secret door? I want a secret door. Wait, you have a good guy who turns out to be a bad guy? I want that. And so they started adding in these story elements. And as they realized, like, wait, I can fly. I can make it so I can fly. Yes, I want to fly. And so like as the process went on and they were able to realize all of these things that they could do, it is where we end up generating these incredibly unique stories.
Yeah. And I think that's great. And I think one of the things that you're bringing in this human-centered element to AI at the same time, like how you talk about where AI gives you three ideas and you've got to come up with your fourth. And so it doesn't just relinquish all controls over to AI, that the students do feel like, you know, they've got a stake in what the outcome of it is going to be, right? That it is still some of their own creativity and originality coming into play. You just mentioned here too that, you know, that it's not really a writing project, it's a reading project. And I know from conversation with you that when students are given credit, right? When their book is published, it's not as an author, right? I think you described it's inspired and developed by, I think are those, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but I think that's what you had said. Can you explain the distinction between being inspired and developed by versus being authored? And how might that help students still feel like they're immersed into the story, the characters, the plot, and the genre, rather than just kind of being bogged down by the creation of the text and the manuscript and that stuff?
Absolutely. That was one of the most powerful parts of this whole project, is like when you look at the library as a whole and when you look at these books that these students have created, none of these books would have been written by an adult for a kid. And also, none of these kids would have been able to have the literary skills to develop these very kid ideas into a full book. So these books are so unique and personalized to what the student wants to read. And it's fostered so many amazing conversations with the students, really about AI and about keeping that human component. So they were working on developing the perfect book that they would want to read. Like we always say, if you walked in the library or the Barnes and Noble and there's a glowing book on the shelf calling your name, what would that be? And so we had a lot of conversations with students as the books were being developed. And they were like, wait a second, like, I don't, like, that's not what I would want. And I would tell them, I would be like, that's your book. You go write that book and be the author of that book. This is just a book that we're writing that you would want to read. But like their stories that they wanted to tell, I told them to hold on to those and to develop and write them as the author of those books. Whereas this was very intentionally a book being developed by them and inspired by them for them to read. It was really for their enjoyment. Like, what is your perfect book right now? And I'm so excited for next year when I have almost all of these students back again and to see what their perfect book looks like a whole year later, because you develop so much and you change so much at that age. I think that's going to be a really interesting thing for them to have, and to double the size of our digital library, I think will be amazing. They love reading each other's books, even though they're not the author of them. That was the funny thing when I brought the first pilot books into fifth grade. So the pilot class was third grade. I brought them into fifth grade and the kids are reading them and they're like, these are good. Like I want to read this. I told them to stop and they were like, wait, no. And I was like, well, don't you want to make your own? And they're like, oh yeah. So that conversation about author versus developed by is something that, I mean, these kids are going to be grappling with their whole lives.
Yeah. And one of the things too is like the promotion of student agency through this process and having them be kind of the directors of this project, right? So in what ways did giving them ownership over making the perfect book, what kind of ownership did that give them, you know, as the co-author, I guess you could say, and igniting their passion for reading and learning?
The excitement around this project was so palpable in the building. We actually had to pause mid-project for state testing, and because I do all the training and work for our digital state testing, and the excitement that came when we got back to the book and I walked in and they were like, are we testing? And I was like, no, we're back to the perfect book. they could not wait to see what that next iteration was, what that message. It's like when we first got email and you're like, oh, I got an email, like someone sent me a message. Like I went, it's going way back, but I remember that feeling of like, oh, someone wrote that for me. And that's that feeling that these kids had, like someone took my ideas and turned it into something. And you can see it grow and develop, and just their excitement around watching their ideas turn into something and seeing the potential of what it could be was so exciting. And they were also so excited for each other and to read what each other, like what the other students' books were, and to find students with similar interests was also a great one, because we had a lot of crossover. And so that now gives that student like 6 books that are on a topic that they're interested in that they could read.
I feel like we've talked a lot about the project here, but we haven't really looked at any examples of them. And I'm wondering if maybe now is a good time that would you like to share some of those unique or diverse examples of some of the projects that were created?
Absolutely. Can we pull up that site? Perfect. I'm gonna click over. So this is the homepage for our Perfect Book Project. There's a little introduction on the front page, and this is for our students right now. So for them to be able to use this as a tool for summer reading.
Sorry to interject here really quick. Are you okay if we share a link to this so that if people wanted to go view it themselves, they would be able to do that? And we'll embed that into the show notes and descriptions.
Great. So this is our digital library. Right now it has some instructions for the students to use it for summer reading. And then these are the links to the actual grade libraries. So right now, the way it works is each of these books is really developed for the individual students' reading level. So just by going to third grade books doesn't mean they're all at the same reading level. And right now they're not organized by level, but I'm hoping once we double this from 300 to 600 books next year, we can get more granular with the filters and the way that we organize them. And so you'll see, these are some examples. These are the pilot classes books. And you can see they are inspired and developed by Ben, text generated by Gemini. So this is a student who's so interested in Batman, loves everything about Batman, and was looking for a very unique book about a face-off with Two-Face. And he wanted there to be a problem where Two-Face would flip a coin, and then depending on how the coin would land, either something bad or something worse would happen. And these students were so excited as they developed these books. Super Sandwich is another great one. So the third grade group was able to develop their books. And then at the end, we talked about a little bit about image prompting. And so they were able to use image prompting to try to develop the cover image for their book. That started in third grade, fourth grade, and fifth grade were able to do that. And I'm hoping that now that image prompting is becoming, or image generation is becoming so much easier, and that we can now streamline and maintain a character, that next year we'll even be able to do illustrations or images for each chapter of the book. I have to tell you my favorite book, this is a really unique one, was in fifth grade, and it's actually by a student who loves heavy metal music. And
I like that fifth grader. All right.
Yes, yes. And I mean, there are no fifth grade appropriate. I mean, there's very limited books in general about heavy metal, let alone ones that are catered for a fifth grader. So the original title of the book was Highway to Hell and Back, which is a little dark, but also a really cool name for a book. So it's H2H and Back is where we landed on it. And it is this epic rock battle that includes all of the students' favorite bands. And the book starts with a legend. I don't know if I open it, will you also be able to see it? Let's see.
If you don't, you maybe have to switch tabs.
I think, did it open or no?
Yep.
It did. Okay. So it actually, you see each book begins with like a summary for a student and then some vocab words that might be outside of their reading level. That they'll find throughout. And when the students went through the editing process, part of their hallucination hunting was actually looking to make sure that all of those vocabulary words were actually found in the text. And we did find some vocab words that were listed that weren't in the text. And so this one starts with a prologue of a legend of this. In order to become a true rock god, you had to face off against the great darkness. And so you can see it starts with this legend, and then it moves into the chapters where all of a sudden this concert, this music festival's going on, and then all of a sudden there's like an earthquake, and they end up in this like superdome where they have to have this epic rock battle. And so it was just such a unique book and story that as I was watching this student develop it, and I watched the student's excitement for school, and this is a friend who was not always excited about all of the things that were happening, it was amazing. And to see this student even like connect with their dad over it. And they were talking about like how the book developed and like how awesome it would be. We did find in fifth grade, especially, a lot of fan fiction, which is not a genre that typically exists for students at this age in the elementary school. So we have students dancing on stage with Michael Jackson. We have the student who ends up in the WWE or gets drafted for the Patriots. So lots of unique, really like really personalized books that other students are even connecting to.
The one you just shared, that honestly sounds like a Jack Black script.
Yes. It's so interesting. So it was the first line of the prologue. I read that when it was like being generated, and I heard Jack Black's like voice in my mind, like, listen up, young rockers.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was, what was happening when I was listening to you explain it.
I think the cover art that's there looks really amazing. Like, I'm sure that wasn't the first generation of an image most of the time that they had to keep working on it, right? But man, they look awesome.
Yeah, they did. They did such a great job. And it's so interesting because this, like, having adult learners and student learners at the same time in this project, the different groups struggled with different things and excelled at different things. And the image generation was something that the students really excelled with. Whereas like prompting is something I think that prompting in general, teachers are really uniquely qualified to be excellent prompt engineers because we're used to explaining really complex processes very, very simply. And like, and we can articulate those thoughts. But when it came to the image prompting, the students were much able better to articulate the style and the elements and exactly the action that they wanted to see in the images.
And just to remind people here really quick that if you want to see some of these images and you are on either Apple or Spotify, that you need to go over to the YouTube channel and check out some of these different ones that are on here. They're really amazing.
So I think, did I answer? I forgot what the original question was.
Yeah, you definitely showed many of the unique and creative ones. And definitely there's an opportunity for people to look for more.
Yeah, and it's great to see, like, this is kind of some of the end product, right? I think there's a part two that is important to mention is obviously there through this process, and we talked about struggle a little bit earlier just in regard to you creating this for teachers, but we know that students can often face struggles too, right? There's challenges, there's frustrations along the way. How was that handled with, you know, as this process went on and you kind of saw students creating these books, what were the challenges or frustrations that you witnessed, and what other valuable lessons could be taught there as far as like resiliency, things like that?
Yeah, by the time we were towards the end of this after state testing, we were on a bit of a tight timeline. But I think because of the novelty of the project and because of its like intense personalization, student engagement was actually not an issue. So, and we had even, so when they got their first five book synopses, there was also a doc that was filled with like other ideas, like with like 40 just other general ideas. And we did have some students who are like, I don't like any of these, like, we know we have those, like, okay, we'll go take a look there. And I was like, oh, well, I like this one. And so then they are always these like backup options for if we had a student that didn't really want to move forward, especially when we got to that outline piece at the end. Because if they're like, oh, I like this chapter the way it is, it's like, okay, well, then add in a piece of dialogue or add in what is that character wearing? Like, add in at least a detail about it. So it wasn't that like, okay, it's good. Okay, it's good. I want to see what's next. It really made them intentionally work on it. The struggle we had was absences. So students that were out. But again, we were so lucky that they were so engaged that we had kids at home sick working on, like, the only thing they did want to work on was their book. So we were so lucky. And we also had resources from Google for Education available to us too as part of the Innovator Project. So there was that excitement factor too. We had some people come and visit the school from Google. And so there was a lot of excitement around the project. And we had a big assembly at the end where the students like shared parts of their books and were able to like even like read with a buddy.
Awesome. What would you say would be like one of the most surprising or even rewarding outcomes from doing the project that kind of caught you off guard?
I think the most rewarding piece of it was seeing the students, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, seeing the students connect over their books. I was in the hallway. It was the last week of school. I was in the hallway with one of my friends who takes walks in the hallway. And I always ask for the 411, what's going on in the building. And we were walking for a little bit when another student went to fill up their water bottle. And I went to that student. I was like, oh, your book is like the Banana Blitz. It's this very silly book. And I was like, you haven't met this student yet. There were two grade levels apart. His book is all about the virus that makes objects come to life. And they were like, what? I want to read your Banana Blitz book. And the two of them literally just walked away from me talking. It was the sweetest thing. Cause like I talked to both of these students all the time, but they had never even really met each other. And they just walked away talking about their silly, very silly books. And that moment for me was just like, it was just the best to see them so excited about their idea becoming something that they could actually have a full conversation about. And it's not just an idea. It's actually like, oh, and then this happened and then that happened. I think that was definitely the most rewarding piece, but also it was surprising to see, you think these kids have such niche interests and they do, but they're also so interested in learning. It's that windows and mirrors that we hear a lot about representation, and to really see that in action in such a personal way was just amazing.
And the culmination of the project, the students, you just mentioned a couple there where they're, you know, sharing their, what they made and things like that. That there's also the physical copies too. And so extra copies get donated to the school library, right? So you have, it's kind of a unique piece of it because it's not just digitized then. You actually have the physical books, something that you can, you know, tangible. What kind of impact do you think that has on maybe, you know, getting students back connected with the physical reality of their creation?
I think having most of our work was actually done originally in Google Docs, but then once we actually created that first text, nothing was done on the Chromebooks. Nothing was done digitally. They got a first manuscript copy that was like on copy paper, but it was two pages to a page. And so it stapled on the side. So it looked like a real like manuscript. And so they went through, and that's where they had to like do the hallucination hunt. And that's where they were like doing all of their final editing. We found some really funny hallucinations along the way, which even made the students more excited to read their books really closely. They did their final editing, and all of that was done on paper. And so they have these manuscripts of these books that are totally marked up by then. And then I even showed them like examples of, I think, I forget the book. It was a book that they had been reading, but we found like a marked up editor's like version of it, a picture of it. And so the students were able to see like, this is what authors do and editors do, is they take these manuscripts and they mark them up. And then that's what goes in. So they've made these final copies, these digital versions that then we got printed into actual books. But now they have the both iterations of it physically too, which is really exciting for them. And it was such a big deal because they all wanted to bring them home. And that was part of it too, is like, no, you can't bring it. Like you can't bring it home until the end, but we didn't even let them keep them in their desks to build excitement. Like if you weren't working on it, you didn't have it. So anytime they weren't working on it, the teacher collected all the manuscripts in a bin and they had to go and get it in order. Like, cause it was about building that excitement and making it special. We didn't want it shoved in the desk and all wrinkled up.
Now, I can tell this is not just a one-off project. It wasn't something that you just did for this school year. So, you know, like as we're gearing up to start another year with our kids, you know, what do you see changing? What do you see improving? What do you see staying the same? Kind of, or do you have new surprises up your sleeve?
I think even just this summer, like I said, the models have improved so much. Mm-hmm. I need to go back and take a look at the gems that I had at the end of June. And I think we can streamline now so much of the actual process where I think the prompts, like you said, when you iterate a gem and or when you're building your own bot and you actually use it to improve itself, I think I've gotten to a point with those now that I can really train the teachers on how this is working and why this is working and get more technical on the teacher side. Whereas last year it was much more proof of concept and being like, okay, this is something we can do and we can do it safely. But now it's going to be more training the teachers on what's actually happening. And I think from the student side of things, just our capabilities, like I said, to be able to add really amazing images throughout the whole book, maybe to record some audiobooks, and we want to start at different points in the year at different grades so we can build up our library and make it more robust at different grade levels as well. So there's a lot coming this year. I'm really excited to see where the project goes, and we're going to keep everything on this website. So as we build these new books, they'll be added to this same site.
Well, I hope you'll let us know how the process is going and keep us updated on new things that you're doing. But David, you got the last one here.
Yeah. Liz. So obviously we'll share the website as well in our show notes and things, but is there other ways that, you know, if people have questions that you're willing to engage with, like through email, social media, any of those type of things? And then what do you have coming up? Do you have any upcoming events, projects that you want to promote or share?
Absolutely. So I'll give you my email address also to include. I'm not on social, but please, anyone feel free to reach out with questions. I'm happy to share my gems. I'm happy to share the process or any information about this, especially to get some feedback for improving it for my teachers. I am planning on presenting at the MassCU conference at Gillette Stadium in October about this project and then about just building gems in general. It's something that I've done a lot of work on. And I've actually created some template gems that I'll also give you guys links to if you want to post those as well. So I'm really excited to see where this year goes, but I've loved having this opportunity. This has been really fun.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed it too. And thank you once again.
Thanks for listening to Integrate This. Want to take your learning further? Head over to our YouTube channel for quick tutorials, deep dives, and more EdTech tips you can use right away. Don't forget to subscribe and catch new podcast episodes every Thursday on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, keep exploring, keep innovating, and keep integrating this.